You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Galactic Hollow Nerd, welcome to the Scum and Villainy Podcast. I'm your host, Richard White, better known as Kelvin Tiberius. Joining me today is Mark Fletcher, better known as Sable Griffin, the ship's cabin boy. What's up, Mark?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
Yeah, you sound like smooth jazzy right now. I kind of like that.
I'm a bit more squawkier than usual.
Also joining us today is Will Barnacle, better known as Will. Will, we got to get you a handle or something. the ship's designated driver. What's up, Will?
Not much.
And finally joining us today is Dr. Bob Randall, better known as Major Juggler, the ship's computer. What's up, Bob?
Hey, guys. I finally managed to go and play X-Wing for the first time in like 3 months. That was fun.
Nice, man. All right, so let's jump into it because I, of course, forgot this on the document again because it's 1.0. And I thought we put it to bed, but apparently people are still playing. Has anybody played in any? You played some X-Wing, Bob, but Will, you played in another tournament, right? Like either both of you guys went to go play some games.
I played in one of the local store tournaments this weekend in Bloomington. Finished top eight. Wasn't bad. It was fun. Tyler ended up and
so
won the whole
here.
Thing.
Yeah, he did the damn thing, right?
Yeah, we ended up in, I don't know if this is, like, some type of weird conspiracy thing, but it seems like Tyler and I get matched up every time we go to Bloomington, either in first round, second round, whatever, and this trend continued. We've matched up in first round, and he ended up and beat me.
What did he fly? Because I'm gonna get into you after we talk about what you flew.
So he flew double Reaper and Vader. So he had adapt Vader with ATC engine upgrade and title, X1 title or whatever. And then he had Vermile, VI, Krennic, and slicers there with lightweight frame. And then he had the PS1 Reaper with palp. And title, I guess. The Aileron's title on both. So he was double jamming and single jamming and all sorts of craziness. Our game was very interesting.
What did you fly,
in that,
Will? Now I'm gonna pick at you. What did you fly?
No, I flew five X-Wings.
Why?
Again. The five rookies.
Why? Okay, look. I have been begging you to fly AP-5 in four caverns with Crackshot. And you said, no, I want to fly four X-Wings with Hobby and Tarn and whatever weird-ass combos that you wanted to do. No, I'm going to do that. And you and I said, okay, fine. After that, fly four X-Wings with Crackshot and freaking AP-5. And you're like, okay. And you didn't even do either.
Yeah, it was a judgment call as far as if I wanted to do the four or the five. Yeah, it was mostly just to try and get more reps in with the five for heading to Gen Con. But the real reason I haven't tried the AP-5 and four is all of my 1.0 stuff is boxed up in the closet. So that would mean I'd have to dig it out and find my Sheathapede stuff and everything.
Actually, my cards that I'm going to be flying for this, I'm going to borrow all from my conciliary Matt Newt, and I'm just going to use all of this stuff. There might be my physical ships, but other than my dice, but other than that, I'm just using all his stuff. I don't care. I'm just going to knock it out.
That's fair. So, like I was saying, our game was kind of, it was a good lesson learned, I think, for both of us, because he hadn't, he literally just opened the Reapers there. I gave him one and he got another one, I think, there. So we were both kind of like somewhat newish, you know, into the list, especially new into the matchup, which I do expect to see a lot of that matchup at Gen Con. But it was one of those things where I turned in on Vader very early to try and keep him honest. And then the question came, do I just swing everyone at one of the Reapers and go from there, or do I try and keep putting pressure on Vader? So if I can catch him in arcs, I can make him melt, and then the rest is just going after the Reapers.
So my question for you, Will, is we're gonna get into a little dirty discussion here for a quick second. My question for you is, at Gen Con, is it like a win-at-all-costs tournament, or are you just going to have fun?
I'm mostly going to have fun. The main thing with me with Gen Con is my performance has been, I have basically just missed the cut. Is it 3 out of the 4 or 5 years I've been there? So it's one of those things where it's a little bit like I want to do well, but I honestly, it's 1.0. I don't really care that much.
So the only thing I'm going to say is, if you're flying 5 X-Wings, for the love of God, will you start in a corner with 3 facing forward, 2 facing each other, and not move until someone picks a lane? Will you do that for me? I know it's kind of dirty pool, but you're flying low PS nonsense. I feel like you deserve every opportunity for a win.
Nobody deserves fortressing. Nobody.
This is all your fault, Mark. They wouldn't have even done this if it weren't for your bomb craziness, so I don't want to hear it from you.
What are you talking about?
Everyone was scared shitless of those bombs, so they hid in a corner so they don't have to deal with it. And then they went, oh, this is tactically smart.
Richard Hsu was fortressing back in 2014 Worlds. Yeah. I know, because he became the most hated man in X-Wing for doing it, unseating the person I had made the most unperson.
It's, you know what's so funny is no one even cares nowadays if you fortress. Right. It's like become de jure.
I care.
Do.
I care.
Well, this is why you don't play 1.0, Mark, and you only play 2.
If you fortress, you're a bad person.
Well, I'm a bad person. I'm a pirate. Will, you are too. Remember that, buddy. You can fortress to victory. Just build like a flag that says Will's Kick-Ass Corner and just chill out. I'm telling you.
Well,
I won't respect you in the morning.
I mean, did you before?
I was just going to say, to be fair, I do have a 75% win record, you know, with the list without fortressing.
Yes, but
and
it would be with it.
It would be zero, because nobody wins.
The main thing, I did a quick tally of how many X-Wings in, like, 12 games I've actually lost, and my pilots, they've got almost a 70, you know, percent survival rate. So I think my boys in those X-Wings are pretty happy. They're liking their chances when they go on the table.
I hear what you're saying, but also you'll know exactly what lane they're going to be in. I'm just putting it out there.
Well, I'm just saying, Ricky, I've been able to do that without fortressing.
Okay. It's called a one forward.
That is...
And bear roll back.
That's so outrageous.
So all that's right. that's a really good survivability ratio for those X-Wings. Is that the point where you start naming them, and when they die, you're like, oh, he died. I have to give him a different name now for the next game, because it's actually a different guy.
I was actually thinking about it, to be honest.
he died. Put a mustache on him.
No joke. Every time I play somebody with a swarm, I always try and name those people and start like to tell them the tale of that person. And how they've got, you know, a wife and kids, and they just sent little old Billy off to Imperial school, and, you know, he's young and he shows a lot of promise, and you wouldn't want to kill Billy's dad, would you? And no joke, I do that every single game with the swarm.
And then he rolls 3 blanks and he's dead.
I'm just trying to guilt trip him, right? Anyway, so you got 8th, Will. Good job. Good job to Tyler, who's not here. Also, Tyler, how dare you not be here? Anyways, let's move on to Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob, you went to a store championship too, didn't you?
Yeah, I was actually defending my title at Abington, which only had 10 people this year because, you know, it's kind of the Twilight Eve.
It's a good turnout for this year.
Well, we had over 20 last year, but that was back when I was flying Paratani. It was just not fair. So, I don't know, we had like 26 people or something last year, but this year was only 10. The TO actually opted to play to make it an even number, so we had 9 players, and then he played. And I played Whisper Double Reaper. I didn't have Palp, but I had Kallus on Whisper, Krennicon Vermeil, and then a Slicer PS1 jammer guy, basically.
So I'm gonna channel Tyler Tippett here for a half second and say that I don't think I could ever fly Double Reaper without Krennic and Palpatine. It just seems like a waste to not do both of the best cards the Imperials can carry, or at least two. Yeah, because Kylo's best on Chirino, so the two best cards are probably in a vacuum, Palpatine and Krennic, right?
Yeah, I looked at that and I tried to make it work with Whisper. I really wanted to play Whisper because I had gotten top four in Nova Open 2015, which was maybe the last large tournament I've actually traveled for, and I got a painted TIE Phantom that's like partially decloaked, and I've never flown it competitively ever.
All right, so I can absolutely, for a store championship, empathize with wanting to run that.
So you know what I ran into my first two games? Pilot skill 10 nib. And somehow, despite all odds, the variants worked in my favor, and I won both of those games with one hit point left on Whisper both games. So yay green dice, so, and yay Krennic.
Yeah, and Krennic. Yeah, Krennic. Yeah. Paid for it.
I ended up going 3-1 on that day.
That extra shield is really good. Krennic in 1.0 is really, really good.
Yeah, he's stupidly good. You're like, oh, I rolled all blanks. Well, that's fine. Take a shield anyway. It's all good.
Yeah, plus have a shield. Oh, plus have the equivalent of FCS, right?
It's right. So outrageous. I had Krennic crew on Major Vermeil, so it was like double FCS because I had FCS also on Whisper, and so Whisper would shoot and get a target lock, and then if Major Vermeil was within range too, then Vermeil would get a target lock and immediately use it. So it was just kind of silly. But all my games were super, super close. I could easily have been 2-2 or maybe 4-0, but I feel like 2-2 would have been more likely given the way it played out. And
how'd you end up doing?
Well, I was number 2 overall, so I went 3-1. We only had enough people for 4 rounds, and I lost to the tournament winner, and he was flying 4 X-Wings, and it was that was great. It was actually, I think, his first time winning a tournament, so that was fantastic.
Boy, I think 4 X-Wings sounds like so much fun. I imagine he had such a good time flying those.
Nudge, nudge.
Is that another jab?
Yes. Apparently, I have to be more obvious. I'll dial that up a little bit. Anyways, I'm sorry, Bob.
That's about the end of my story. Oh, wait, did you want me to do a half-hour like Nova Squadron report now where I go into every round?
Bob, I know that hold up. What are they calling themselves now?
Lack of focus. Go check them out.
That makes a lot of sense. Anyways, we are not that podcast, and we will move on to more fun shit. Like, what the hell kind of bounty are you guys giving the ship's crew? Did you guys get anything good?
I got the top 8 set of range rulers. So I've got now the yellow set from winning the Springfield one, and now the orange set for top 8 in Bloomington. So yay for lots and lots of more range rulers.
That's nice. I mean, you know, you can always send one to your buddy, you know.
Yeah. 2.0 juke card. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one. That one's actually, you know, useful. Yeah, I didn't get that one for top 8. I got that one for winning the other one. But yeah, there's a Krennic 2.0 card.
If you just showed up to this tournament, there was 9 people plus the TO that showed up, so it was pretty much automatic top 8. It was fantastic. So, but I did manage to get my plastic bridesmaid card, which is a pretty sweet-looking X-Wing. My only sad thing about this is that it's an X-Wing 1.0 card, so clearly I'll use it in 2.0 and just put the official 2.0 card in the back in a sleeve.
Just win a couple of them and use it as a shield token. all right, so the things we're going to try and talk about today, we're going to try and talk about Gen Con. We kind of teased that a little bit. Dr. Bob, I'm actually probably going to let you go next. We're going to talk about where the hell my numbers are at, Bob. we're going to try and talk about Solo and then get into some actual goddamn X-Wing content with talking about threat cards and what we know about them. And, you know, we can almost play X-Wing 2 at this point, and sort of the kits that have been announced for 2.0. And there's been a lot of them, so we're going to kind of jump into that a little bit too. But let's go ahead and start by chucking Dr. Bob underneath the bus here. Bob, where the hell my numbers at? Baby,
chuck me under the bus and then make sure to back it up and run over me again to make sure.
I'm about to, because look, man,
reformat the hard drive for the ship computer. Reprogram.
I need my numbers. X-Wing jousting values, what is it, 3.0, 4.0, whatever .0. Look, why do you think you're here, Bob?
So the lawyers got to me. They made me do it.
but really, okay, so there was a big hullabaloo on the forums, like, paint me the picture here about what the hell happened.
Okay, so the short of it is that I didn't feel like doing the work I've been doing and then putting it out in the public domain, because it's effectively doing a very large part of FFG's design and playtesting job for them, which, I mean, some people would be willing to do that. I'm kind of not. Part of it is that I don't really also want to put, like, on a schedule where I have to do something and, like, everyone's looking at it and everyone's giving me a bazillion requests. But it wasn't as big of a deal for X-Wing 1.0 because the costs are printed on the card. So if I say, hey, I think this thing isn't going to be good, and even if I say that in a preview article, it frankly doesn't matter because all the costs are locked in because it's inked in and set in stone, and it's never going to change now anyway. So I had approached them via email to ask if they would be interested in me doing a consulting agreement with them. I expected them to say no, but I figured I would ask them anyway because, I mean, I imagine Alex, Frank, and Max could use that info if they had access to it. But basically their management came back and said that the only way that they would be willing for me to work on stuff would be either if I just did it after everything is released for free and then they can just use it. So obviously not pay me and not give me any access to pre-released materials, or I can just join the general playtest group, which would involve A, they wouldn't pay me, and B, I would have to sign the standard playtester non-disclosure agreement, and in the playtester non-disclosure agreement there is a clause, an intellectual property clause, which does not matter for like 99% of people that could sign it, but for me it might matter, and it basically says we own everything. And I had clarified with that with them before, years ago, to say, well, does that include if I say 2 plus 2 equals 4 or some equivalent math version that you own that too, and that I can never say 2 plus 2 equals 4 in the public domain later? And like, and they said, we aren't going to say anything about what that might or might not mean. So I would just like have to sign on a dotted line. And I offered them way back when to you know, well, let's change that. You can use whatever I give you. It's fine, but you can't say that you own it exclusively. So basically, I want to be able to someday, if I get around to it, to publish a more analytical theory in the academic literature. The underlying math actually applies to pretty much any miniatures type board game. It's very broad. And if I were to sign the NDA and playtest for them, I would not be able to do that, because if I then published in the literature or even made forum discussions about this is my methodology, they could in theory come after me and sue me. So, I mean, clearly there's no interest in me to like sign the NDA, especially for free. So that left me with the only option of I could just do it in the public domain after every Joe Schmo, me being just a regular Joe Schmo, has seen all the stuff, and then I can just say, okay, this is what I think it should be, and then they could do whatever with it. But I didn't really feel like doing that, and that's just kind of a personal business decision on my end. So I did tell them when I made them the offer to say, hey, you know, if you're interested, I can do some consulting potentially if you're interested. But the flip side to that is, I can't offer to do consulting for them and get paid for it and then say, well, you said no, so I'll do it for free anyway. So the corollary to that was, if you say no, we do not want your consulting services, then I told them, okay, well, I won't do it for free, and I'm not going to say anything about second edition when it comes out, because that would defeat the whole purpose of me offering. So that's where I'm at now. I won't be doing any in-depth mathematical analysis in public anyway. So I'll probably be doing a lot of it myself, just because I have a lot of scripts already built up there. I have a lot of stuff that I had built up for X-Wing Community Mod, which obviously never took off because X-Wing 2nd Edition is like, that just destroyed everything. Everyone's excited about that now, which is great.
Yeah, well, to be fair, that's one of them good problems, right?
Yeah, it's great. So I'll probably do some stuff for myself. Maybe or maybe not. I'll let a few things slip. You know, might talk in generalities, but I don't want to.
I was going to say, because Bob, I mean, We're just going to have to kick you off the ship if you're not going to be able to tell me if this stuff's good or bad cost-wise, right? You don't have to tell me exactly how much it costs. I just need to know if I'm smart or not, right? You got to spell check me.
So, well, I got a couple more months before I feel it out, but
I just need reg squiggly lines when I say this should be this, and then I don't have to know like the answers in there like a spell check.
Ricky,
red lines,
I,
man.
I think you might be like a math wing drug addict that needs his fix to tell him that A wings are good or not good.
Man, no, Bob. All I need is someone to tell me that they're absolutely bad and kick. I don't want to tangent too bad, but someone talked to me about A-Wings, an A-Wing list that's good recently, and I'm already, like, spiraling back. It's pathetic. All right, so Bob's not giving us numbers. We're all sad, but he's still going to give us excellent analysis on the podcast that is maybe, probably, we don't know, backed by those numbers. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Moving on to Gen Con.
Did we want to talk about the other thing that's been floating around like everywhere on the internet, which is there's some kits that will be out specifically for Wave 1, and then some kits that will be out specifically for Wave 2, and some kits that will be out for Wave 3, and they gave us timings on those?
I did want to go into that. I was going to go into that after Gen Con. I got an order, Bob. The freaking document. It's right there. I'm just going down.
Actually, the document has this next.
I might have it there. It's my fault. We will proceed to Gen Con as ordered, sir. I salute the Pirate Lord Captain.
We're such professionals. All right, so... But you did have... Okay, so I think I know where you're going with this. So there are kits coming out in 2, 3, 4, like waves 2, 3, 4, right? And
1, 2, 3. I don't think they said anything about 4, but...
Right, so we have schedules for these waves. And why don't you tell us about that schedule? Because the interesting thing is what that tells you with the release date. So jump into this.
Right, so the dates that we already know is everyone knows that X-Wing 2nd Edition launches on September, I believe it's 13th of this year, and so the first special wave kit is going to be released a month after that in October. And there's been no announcement about Wave 2 or Wave 3, but there is a Wave 2 special kit, and that is slated to release in December. So... if the Wave 1 kit was 1 month after September, then presumably that means Wave 2 is launching in November. Holy crap. And then Wave 3 would be released in January, and the kit would come out in February. So that's a lot of releases. So presumably Wave 2, and I'm not a playtester, by the way. You know, we kind of just discussed that. So I have no idea. I mean, this could be false information. It's seems like it's legit, but that's a lot of ships they're releasing. So I figure they'll cover all the conversions for the Resistance and the Imperial First Order. That seems a pretty obvious thing that they're going to do.
Yeah, they've already said that they're going to be doing that in Wave 2, right?
Yeah.
Do I remember that correctly?
I believe that is the rumor, at least. I think that's actually what was being told people at like Worlds.
Yeah, I feel like I remember
like that.
Well, they did also say that the conversion kits are actually going to be cheaper for for those two factions because there's just not as many ships to convert. So they've already obviously thought about the conversion kits. And presumably, again, I'm talking out of my butt. I have no idea. But I'm assuming that they're going to come out with more ships for those factions to get the ship count higher. They certainly have enough to pull from. Wave 3, I got nothing. I have no idea. All I know is that presumably something else is coming out in January. So we're going to have a meta in September that's just completely wide open, and there's going to be no one's going to know. It's going to be a giant mess. And then we'll maybe figure it out ish in a month or so. And then Wave 2 is going to drop and just blow it all up again. There'll be some stuff that's garbage, some stuff that's really good. And maybe at some point in here, FFG is going to do a points cost adjustment. We don't know. They've said that they're going to try to do 3 or 4 point cost adjustments per year. So that sounds like if they keep to that and they release in September, that they won't actually even do a points cost adjustment until maybe Wave 3. And then Wave 3, I don't know, new stuff, no idea, and so that'll blow up all over again. So,
so the interesting thing after you thought about those kits, and we're gonna jump into what are in that kit, or what information's in that kit, like later, but what is it about that release schedule that you saw? Because you had a really interesting take on what that actually means for the meta and sort of like a difficulty in the meta, right?
Yeah, I mean, anytime that FFG comes out with a new expansion, just looking at X-Wing 1.0, going all the way from Wave 1 to Wave 14, it's always been true that there's been some ships that have been obviously better than others, some combos that have been better than others. So some stuff on initial release is kind of like, eh, garbage, competitively. Maybe fun, but garbage. And then some other stuff that is relatively overpowered, and typically there's something that incidentally pushes the power curve. Maybe intentionally, I don't know, I've never been part of the playtest process, but certainly there's always something that seems to push the power curve. And so we're going to get probably that back to back to back. And without enough time to sit back and look at this, and I don't know what their playtest process has been and what their adaptation process will be after it releases, but they tend to move pretty slowly, which isn't the worst thing in the world because you don't necessarily want to overreact as well. But they're going to be flying blind a little bit for these first few months. So my personal view is that it's going to be very advantageous for players that can kind of crack the code early.
I want to suggest that your analysis has a fundamental assumption that may be flawed, which is that FFG can actually release product that fast. This is the same company that routinely releases things a quarter late.
Have you guys, to Mark's point, do you remember the boat?
Right.
It has a zero stop.
I think it has a -1 stop. I don't know how that works. It just does.
I think the green is -2 as well, somehow.
It's so funny. Red 1, green -2.
It ends up
going backwards.
It gets there, but not the way that you thought it would. It has to go around the world the other way.
I seriously hope that you are correct, but I would be surprised. We'll know more after Gen Con, which as of time of recording is next week.
Yeah, so I do, speaking of Gen Con, I want to get into that only because I am insanely jealous. I think two of you are going, right? Me and Bob are not, but Will and Mark are, right?
Yes, yes, I will be there.
Yes, sir.
Oh, God, guys. All right, so this is shaming because I think this is the third Gen Con in a row where I'm like,
shame!
I really shame! Want to go, and I have not, and it is just like, ugh, maybe next year. Have you ever been?
Mm-mm. Okay.
I've never been.
You should. It's an experience.
Dude, I just want to go and like, here's the thing, right? I don't know if... Okay, so I don't know 2.0 yet, but I don't know if I would play in an X-Wing tournament if I went to Gen Con. Like, honest to God, sure. Like, it's just, that is an entire day's worth of games where, yes, I could be playing, you know, a bunch of board games, right, that I could never play anywhere else. Or
Loop
RPGs.
And Chewy.
Yeah, or Loop and Chewy, right? But really, like...
Actually,
I could...
So this year would have been the perfect year for you then, because the X-Wing 2.0 events are on Thursday,
freaking monster.
And there are three rounds.
You're a mean person.
You could have easily shown up, gone into the X-Wing 2.0 preview event, got the core set plus an expansion, had three rounds of X-Wing, and then spent the entire rest of the weekend having fun and playing board games.
Yep, and wow.
And even, wow. Yeah, wow. I mean, even...
Damn it, Mark.
I was just going to say, I'm trying to talk you off a ledge, Ricky. I was just going
to
say...
I'm trying to talk even, him onto even the if... ledge. I want his
I was just going to say, like, so next year, if you do commit and can go next year, even if you don't want to compete in like the legit X-Wing event, there's plenty of little side X-Wing things that you can go play two or three rounds and then you're done in 2 hours or something like that, and you know, you can kind of go do whatever the rest of the time.
So let's jump into the official X-Wing content of Gen Con and then get into the fun stuff. So, Will, I know you, Mark, I don't think you are actually playing in the actual Gen Con tournament, are you?
No, I'm just playing in the 2.0 preview event, and then I'm playing L5R as my primary tournament.
Right, so, man, I am kind of, there's always something in the back of my head, by the way, like whispering L5R into my ear, only because I watched a Matt Colville video about L5R and early L5R and how the tournaments actually affected the storyline of the game, and that I just fell in love with that idea. And I don't know if they're doing that now, but that is just so
they
cool.
Are.
That's so cool. And FFG makes really good games. Like their card games are all really good. All right, go ahead.
When I started burning out on X-Wing, I was right around the time that L5R came out. I picked it up, and it actually scratches the same sort of itch. Even though it's a card game instead of a miniatures game, there's all sorts of movement, like moving troops around, attacking, defending. There's a lot of strategy there, as well as the cards that you get.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very well-made game. It's got its problems, like one of the clans is worthless. But for a game of this ambition, they pulled it off very well.
All right, so I'll start. So let's jump into the actual 1.0 content, though.
Sure.
Will, tell me about the Gen Con tournament. This isn't a nationals, is it?
I think it's the North American Championship is usually what Gen Con.
So this is like the last
big
1.0 tournament.
I believe so, unless they're. I don't think there's any other system opens and stuff. That's done, right? The last one was in Seattle.
If there's another tournament, a major tournament like this, it's in Europe.
Yeah.
Okay. So at least in the North America side, this is the last, 1.0 tournament.
This is the last hurrah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, they're, like you mentioned it earlier, that is a little bit, that's also, you know, I want to do at least a little bit better than I did, you know, last year or whatever. But the main thing is I think it's going to have a completely different atmosphere this year in a positive way, because yes, it's going to be like the swan song for 1.0, but it's not like it's 1.0 is over and there's nothing on the horizon. You simultaneously have on that Thursday, you have the 2.0 event, and all the 2.0 content is dropping that weekend. So it's one of those things where you're going to have the cool little mix of, oh, hey, well, it doesn't really matter what I did in 1.0 because, hey, 2.0, it's fun and shiny and new and exciting.
I would avoid hanging out with the Netrunner people then.
Yeah, no, they'll be on suicide watch, I think.
That's sad. All right, so Will, are you gonna do 5 X-Wings? Are you going to fly AP-5 in 4 caverns yet so you can find out that it's awesome?
I mentioned in chat, if I get an actual chance, which I think my only opportunity will be like Tuesday of next week, and we travel on Wednesday, so I doubt that I'll have a chance. So it's probably at this point I'm committing to the 5 rookies. I actually, Ricky, I think I feel better about the 5 rookies than the AP-5, even though I can definitely see your attachment to it.
Here's the thing. I think that it's better in the mirror. I've been telling my buddy Matt that it's better in the mirror, and so if a lot of people are going to be doing that, the cavern crack shots, I think the rookies stand a really good shot. And they do almost... Okay, I'm biased, right? But I think that they do almost as well versus everything else, so it's fine. You know, it's...
No, I definitely agree with you. I think it's kind of a little bit of a coin flip, and I think it maybe comes down to personal style. I usually, if I'm running a swarm, I like if all of my ships are the same just from an interchangeability of movement and stuff like that. So AP5's dial, I honestly have never run
AP5.
I have
terrible,
no idea what that thing.
The
yeah.
thing that's there to strip off stress from your K-turning ships or your stress, your what is it called? The Talon Roll ships. That's it.
Yep. Yeah, and I get that. And what I found in my games with the rookies. Yeah, well, yeah, coordinate, you know, is always, you know, good, especially situationally, with all, everyone being at PS1. I actually have found the way I've been flying, I'm actually not K-turning and Talon Rolling as much as you would initially think. I'm usually setting up, I'm going through the first pass, and then I'm doing the three hard turns out to get the free boost and then flight assist action after the flight assist a lock. And then coming back around.
I buy that. Yeah.
That's what I end up finding myself doing more often than not. And it's basically I go through the initial joust, murder something, or at least put something on fire, and then I basically flower blossom out where I'm not even, maybe I break formation completely and take three one way, two the other, use one as a blocker, that kind of thing. So I definitely see the appeal, like I said, and I think it's good. My personal playstyle, I think I fall more in line with the rookies. So
I think that you're right that there's got to be a ton of those Double Reaper lists out there. And the funny thing is, initially I was thinking, why would you want two support ships? But is it? I don't know if it's Vermeil or Vermeil. I only call it Vermeil because of Dick Vermeil, the Kansas City Chiefs head coach in the early 2000s. But I think that Coach Vermeil is an ace in his own right. So
no, I wouldn't even consider him a support ship, to be honest. He's a small base. I mean, literally, if you just take the model off of it and, I don't know, put a custom Phantom or whatever and say it's a Reaper, which you can't do. But that's almost the way I would look at it. It's not a support ship.
So, Bob, you didn't say anything about not giving us numbers for 1.0 ships. So what's up with Vermeil? How overcosted, undercosted do you think he is?
Oh, gosh. Because
I know that you think he's outrageous, right?
Yeah, he's pretty outrageous. I'm on the spot now and would need to actually go and find my script, but he's just stupid. I mean, if he gets his double slicer jam off, I think I didn't even model him with slicer jam, but if he gets his slicer jam off and he gets a free target lock from Krennic, and he then gets to use his ability. So it's a lot of ifs, but basically as long as you get a slice off, then essentially all things happen. You get a slice off and your buddy that you prototyped gets to shoot to give you the target lock. It's just dumb. I mean, he's like well over 100% jousting efficiency, depending on the percentage rates. If it always happens, then it's like 120%, some stupid number.
He is that good. And I mean, I would argue, and maybe this is again just my playstyle and you know knowing how I would fly it. I mean, I played against Tyler flying it. I watched Tyler fly it in the two, you know, cut games and stuff. Very similar to how I would have approached it and flown it. It is a lot easier than I think, and maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm thinking it's easy with that aileron's flexibility at PS8 because you put VI on him to get him up to PS8. You really can get where you need to go and arc dodge and whatever. And you really don't even need to arc dodge. You're really getting into places to double slicer if you need to, and then set up the exchange to get your arc around later. That becomes a very tangible thing you can do to pretty much anybody almost at will. It's kind of goofy, broken, you know, 1.0. You know, the kids were running the asylum a little bit there at the end, I think, because Krennic is stupid and Jam is stupid. And so you're throwing both of them in the same combo on the same damn ship, most likely. It is a little goofy. Yeah. But you know what? I'd rather deal with that because at least it has a firing arc than I would the damn Ghost or Nim or Miranda or any of the other garbage. So. So I don't fault anyone for playing it. It's good.
All right, so this is so funny. It's like I don't even care. It's like 1.0. Like just move on to the next thing. Anyway, I do want to go into Gen Con though. Gen Con itself. So Mark, what are you doing at Gen Con this year? Make me jealous, man.
Sure. So from a Fantasy Flight perspective, things actually kick off Wednesday with the in-flight report. This is Fantasy Flight's annual big press release. This is when they talk about all their upcoming products. This is when, like, major things are announced. There are a couple exceptions, like 2.0 was announced at Worlds. I think that they had initially kind of considered announcing it at Gen Con and realized that was way too late. They wanted to have it released at Gen Con. So look forward to them announcing potentially Wave 3, potentially dates, potentially any other sort of products. Maybe Wave 3 or some other thing is Epic. We haven't heard anything about Epic for 2.0 yet. I suspect there will be some interesting things there. Now, it's not just an event for X-Wing. You'll hear...
Yeah, they announce all their stuff.
All their stuff tends to be announced there. Mm-hmm. There may be a new game shaking out. I have no idea. I suspect that might also be where we learn if games are dying, like Imperial Assault. So that's going to be
So have I talked to you about how I want to get into... Okay, this is a weird tangent, but you mentioned Imperial Assault, and Mark, you're being an RPG guy, are uniquely qualified to talk about this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how horrible a person am I that I want Imperial Assault to get canceled so people sell their miniatures at a discount and I can buy them for RPG miniatures?
I think on that scale, you are a pirate.
Nice. Okay, good. Good. I'm on Brandon.
Honestly, I don't play Imperial Assault. I have no sort of insider knowledge, but just from the rumors, I suspect they're going to kill off Skirmish, but keep doing the campaign stuff.
And they probably, because they probably want to funnel you to Legion, right?
Yeah, I think that's what the plan is. Move everybody to Legion. Imperial Assault, similar to late stage X-Wing 1.0, is just a dumpster fire of math. It's just not fun or balanced. But the campaign is a blast.
Yeah, so... I've done that a couple. Like, I've done 4 or 5 of those, and every single time it's been fun.
Yeah.
It's like doing the RPG combat, except more streamlined.
Right. Yeah. It's, I played Descent to Death. I never really got into Imperial Assault just because life changed, but I've always been interested in doing the campaign. I suspect that will continue on. Anyway, back to X-Wing. That's Wednesday. That's the mint on your pillow is the big in-flight report. Thursday is going to be the rush to the booth. That one of the reasons that they moved the in-flight report to Wednesday is that after the in-flight report, they will add the products that they announced to, hey, this is coming out, it's for sale now. Go to our booth, but that doesn't work when it's Thursday at noon.
Right.
And right. Den has been open for some time.
So Thursday, are you standing in line to buy 2.0 stuff? Okay. So that's your plan Thursday. So what are you looking to do at Gen Con this year? Make me jealous, my man.
So on Thursday, that's the 2.0 pre-release event. Mm-hmm. That if you sign up, you automatically are given a core set and one of the expansions. Whether you signed up as Imperial or Rebel, Imperial gets a TIE Advanced, Rebel gets a Y-Wing. I think more people are going to lean Rebel because the Y-Wing is a new sculpt, which looks awesome.
Yeah.
I went Imperial just because that's kind of where I think... But that's a three-round tournament. It's just going to be fun. It's using threat cards instead of points.
Mm-hmm.
It's five threat instead of a full eight. It's just going to be light and fluffy and fun and give you a taste of the system. And then, of course, you walk away with a product. So even if I don't get through the line, I'm still going to have X1 2.0 in hand.
Word.
And then, of course, they're like product, like promos, special promos you can get there.
Yeah, the prize support is really pretty good for just a participation fun event. Yeah, definitely. So,
I really get the feeling that they're moving, that they're embracing threat as a long term thing. Not for the main tournaments, but we'll talk about it when we get to threat cards. But I suspect that threat cards are going to be playing a key role inside events for the life of this game.
I actually foresee them being used in events. We talked about this actually on the last cast, like the Imdar Alpha event. I see them doing things like that where they're just like, hey, here's the new wave. Five, you know, whatever, down the line next year. And it's like, hey, the finals are played out with somebody, flip a coin, you're playing Rebel, you're playing Scum, you're playing Empire, whatever, and you have to use the threat cards, you know? So instead of having to goofy build your Imdar list like we did back in, day in Wave 4, now you get threat cards, which mean, oh, I don't have to build anything, I just kind of pick and choose from these, like, three options kind of thing.
I think that threat cards are here to stay, and that there are a lot of exciting things they can do with threat cards that they can't do with point build, even if it's going to be a sideshow. Then the main 1.0 event will kick off Friday, Saturday, I think. I'm not in that.
What are you going to be doing instead?
I'm going to be doing L5R. I've been really enjoying that game. I've been playing Crane, and it's a lot of fun. It's one of those card games that's crunchy and involved, and there's a lot going on.
Is that both Friday and Saturday for you?
Yeah, it's going to be Friday, Saturday. Word. The first day is kind of the seven rounds of try to make the cut to day two. Day two is one of two things. Either you're in the big cut vying for the top prize, or there's a proving ground is what they call it. It's basically the tournament for people that didn't make the cut. And both of those on Saturday can potentially get you a ticket to Worlds, or a seat at Worlds, I should say. So that's going to be big and involved, and I really like that game. It's a lot of fun. If you're at all interested, you should check it out. Just play a game.
Yeah, just play one game, man. It'll be fine.
Just one, just a taste.
All right, so...
First one's free.
So that's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Are you in Indy for Sunday? Or are you leaving Sunday?
Yeah, I'm in for Sunday. Sunday I have a single event, and that's going to be a role-playing game.
What are you going to play?
That's going to be the Star Wars role-playing game. I don't remember exactly which event it was. One of mine was a Contessa event, which was unfortunately canceled because the GM couldn't make it. Contessa mm-hmm. is basically an LGBT-friendly group that goes to major tournaments and runs LGBT-friendly events.
Nice.
Which was really cool. Unfortunately, the one I was in was canceled. I think, actually, that was my Thursday event. But I don't remember which event was which.
Are they running their RPG Day style adventure, or is there one? Oh, that's cool.
They do a whole bunch of different module events
nice.
At Gen Con. The rest of, so most of Thursday and some of Sunday is just going to be Dealer's Den Crawl for me.
Cool.
That really does take a day. It just takes a day.
Yeah.
To walk that hall. One of the things that I just found out is coming out next month that I'm stupid excited about is there's an expansion for my favorite board game, which is Clank in Space. And that's coming out, and I'm hoping to get my hands on a copy there. If not, I'll have to wait until 3-4 weeks pass.
So, Will, what are you doing at Gen Con this year?
So I've got the 2.0 event. I believe it's the same flight that Sable's in, the 4 o'clock. Yep, Thursday. Which, oddly, I think it's like 9 out of 10 people I've talked to. They're all in the Thursday late flight. So I got that.
You're going to find that is a more popular flight because it allows people to try to get to the FFV booth, where if you do the morning flight, you basically miss out on the rest of the stuff. Their vendor.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think that was part of our collective. Tyler and Uncle Mark will be there as well. We'll all be doing the Thursday flight at 4.
Yeah, So we'll be doing
that. That'll be super fun. Super excited for that, obviously.
Are you doing Imperial or Rebel?
No, I'm doing Rebel, actually. So
just like everybody else. One Imperial there.
No, you won't. Tyler's is obviously flying Empire.
Ooh,
there's actually a lot of our locals that are flying Empire. Me and Mark, I think, are the only two that are flying Rebel. Mark because he doesn't fly anything but Rebel, and me because I'm actually just switching it up with 2.0. I flew a lot of Empire and Scum in 1.0, and I'm kind of on the Rebel train for 2.0 for some reason.
One of the things I'm really happy about is the promise that you can run a single faction and get everything possible. And I know for a fact that you are not going to be a single faction flyer, but there are a lot of players that wanted to do that and couldn't.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. That's going to be nice for them. But yeah, like you said, I'll fly a little bit of everything. So I've got that on Thursday. I've actually got a couple little like side event things, I think, sprinkled between, you know, Thursday earlier in the day. So I've got like a Legendary Encounters, the X-Files game is getting dropped.
Nice.
So I've got a win a box game there, I think, on Thursday afternoon. The World War Hulk win a box, which is again Marvel Legendary. That's I think maybe Sunday. But then Friday is all day 1.0 X-Wing. So we'll just see how that goes for making the cut to day two there. We'll see how it goes. I'm hoping I at least make the cut.
If you don't, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. That's a question.
It's Gen Con. What the hell can't I do?
Right.
I mean, there's. I didn't have anything completely set for the day two, but I've got plenty of stuff that I can do. That usually is one of my opportunities to just wander the vendor hall and stuff and hang out with all the guys that I see, you know, once or twice a year.
Yeah, definitely. I suspect I'm not as competitive in L5R as I am in X-Wing. I suspect I'm not making the cut to day two. I suspect I'll end up dropping out of the proving grounds after 3 or 4 rounds. So I might join you walking around.
Cool. Be awesome. And so the event that I am oddly super excited about is the Loop and Chewy casual tournament that is on Sunday morning. That was probably the most fun, I think, collectively we've had at Gen Con in a long time last year when we crashed that poor tournament.
I have heard legends of this.
that was amazing. Chris Allen and I kind of cannibalized each other in the second round. The finals of that were just super fun. It was amazing.
Did we talk about that last episode?
I think so. I think we've talked about Luke and
Chewie. I think a little bit.
Luke and Chewie and how we went in there and the guy who designed it. Yeah, there was a couple of families.
Right, and then a bunch of rapidly aggressive X-Wing players.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I've got that on Sunday morning, which I think might be the final event that I've got. So mostly X-Wing 2.0, 1.0, see if I make the cut. I've got a couple little side events here and there. What I usually do is just kind of see what the cool little hot board games are. Maybe go pick up a copy, or we've got some friends that pick up a copy, and then we just hang out and play them and try things out, which is a lot of fun. So
I'm super jealous, but I hope you guys have fun. Anyways, let's kind of move on to, God, we've got the kits we got to talk about. We did say we were going to talk about Solo, and we got threat cards to jump into.
I guess I did want to mention a couple more things.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good.
That if you're considering going to Gen Con, first, do it. Second, if you want to play X-Wing at this point, but you're daunted by the idea of going to the North American Championship, that the heavy tournament structure is something that's concerning. Hey, I want to go out and enjoy most of my convention. I don't want to burn, 2 days of Gen Con just for a single tournament. There are dozens of single event X-Wing stuff, X-Wing games.
Is Shuttle Tidarium doing their thing again? Because that was awesome.
I hope so.
Last year, it was really cool.
It was in the catalog. I don't know officially if that's still in the catalog, but I did see it in there.
But I know I saw in the catalog there was a trench run. There are all sorts of like one-off events or tiny tournaments that I don't want to sacrifice 2 days for X-Wing, but I want to get a couple games in. There are opportunities for you.
Yeah, and usually like on a... either like a Thursday night, but this year it's the 2.0 event, or like a Friday or a Saturday or something, like late, like after the actual tournaments are over. There's been some guys running some silly, either Hunger Games events or things like, it's basically like you bring one ship that's worth 60 points, or, a list of a 60 points kind of thing, and then you play 1v1, v1, v1, kind of thing. Like, different goofy side event rules, which are usually pretty fun and casual and just an opportunity to get to play the game that we all spend so much time talking about and playing, just in different formats that are completely on the fun side and are pretty enjoyable.
So... yes, it's a whole bunch of good stuff in there. I'm severely jealous of you guys, but do we have time? We've got about a half hour on our normal length of these things.
I was going to say, we could probably just hit the threat cards, like the Gen Con thing for the 2.0, hit the threat cards that apply to the preview event for Gen Con, and maybe that would be enough.
Let's jump into threat cards in general, see how much time we have, we can jump into Solo or the kits or whatever. So,
Before we talked about specific threat cards, I wanted to talk a little bit about the concept, because I know a lot of particularly hardcore X-Wing fans have immediately dismissed these as a sideshow, and I think that may be premature.
Okay, why would you say so?
So, as I mentioned earlier, the threat cards allow you to do certain types of events that Point Buy doesn't allow you to do. One of the ones that's in the rule book is the escalation event. And for those that skipped over that because they saw the word threat card and their eyes glazed over, here's what it is. Both players bring a set amount of threat. Either if it's a casual game, you and your opponent decide that number. In an event, it'll be set ahead of time. Anytime you lose a ship at the end of the round, you can bring a new ship in, a new set of ships in of threat that was destroyed plus one. So if I lost three threat, I can bring in four threat. If I lost four threat, I can bring in five. And then the first person to lose twice the threat they started with loses. That I suspect we will see throughout the life of this game. I also suspect we'll see, as mentioned earlier, Imdar Alpha style events or other events where we're having fun. Let's spice it up a bit. We'll do threat cards instead. And the threat cards are not perfectly balanced in any sense of that term. But they're much easier, and for an event, like a side game at an event, I think they're just about perfect for that casual sort of setting.
I think that's what's going to make the 2.0 preview event at Gen Con so much more fun and enjoyable, yeah. Because you don't have to necessarily worry about all the goofy little list building. It's, hey, I've got 5 threat to work with, and I played Empire, so I've got 2 TIE Fighters and a TIE Advanced at my disposal. Let's see what kind of 5 threat I can make with what cards I've got. And I think most people will, you know, gravitate towards Vader plus a TIE Fighter.
I think with 2 TIE Fighters and a TIE Advanced, that's your only choice. You could do Merrick plus a named TIE. That might work, but you're going to be struggling in the mirror.
I think you could do Merrick in 2 Academies or Obsidians too, true. If you really wanted to.
Yeah, I had to think about that. You might be able to pull that.
So,
Imperials are a little light because they have PS, or I shouldn't say PS, I should say Initiative 1 and Initiative 2 TIEs for 1 threat, and then all the other TIE Fighters are 2 threat, which is a huge price increase. Like, would you pay 25 points in X-Wing 1.0 for a TIE Fighter?
To be the flip side there, the reason that it might actually be a choice is the upgrades. Because neither of the threat ones have upgrades.
Right. You see, that's the thing I keep not paying attention to. Yeah.
All of the named ones have at least 2 upgrades.
Yeah, like Nightbeast has got Hull and Shield. Holy cow.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the lower initiative ones have 3 upgrades. Hull, Stealth and Crackshot for Wampa. Predator, Hull and Shield for Nightbeast. Outmaneuver, Afterburner, Shield for Black Squadron Ace. And then the rest have 2 upgrades, usually involving a shield or stealth upgrade. So I hear what you're saying, that why would you ever go to 1 TIE Fighter, but I think there might actually be a reason.
Well, for HAL Runner, there certainly is. I mean, people are going to naturally say HAL Runner is 2 threat. She gets Juke and a shield upgrade, and I'll take 6 other TIE Fighters. Like, obviously, that's a list.
So let's dive into these, actually, like, because we're kind of beating around the bush here. Let's just jump right into it. So let's jump into some of these threats. And Will, I know that you wanted to bring this up to begin with. What are some of the ones that are just calling out to you? Or is like, that is an absolutely great value for a threat?
So on the TIE Fighter specifically, now here's what is going to be a little bit confusing, because we're trying to use this and tie this into the Gen Con event. The Gen Con event, you get the core set, so that gets you just the core set TIE Fighter pilots and a TIE Advanced expansion, so you get all your whatever threat cards are in the TIE Advanced expansion themselves. So I don't know where the split is between the core set TIE pilots and the expansion TIE pilots. I know HAL Runner is not in the core set. So I don't know if Iden or, Valen or Nightbeast or Wampa, I don't know which one of these are in the core set, unfortunately. I didn't look, because I'm playing Rebel for the event. I didn't really look at the Empire. Maybe Sable, you know for sure.
Not for the extra TIE fighters.
For this type of event where you're kind of looking at like 2 ship lists in the 2.0 scale, I mean, Nightbeast really jumped out at me, because you got Hull and Shield, and he's got the ability to kind of get the token stacking going on, right? Because he gets a free focus after he performs a blue.
I have the threat cards that are available for the core set. It's Academy and Obsidian, which are the 2 threats. Nightbeast, Iden Versio, Valen Rudor, and Black Squadron Ace.
Okay, so out of those, I mean, Iden is always going to be good. So that's something that you can literally just say, hey, no, a proton torpedo didn't shoot at me. The outmaneuver, I think, is going to be a card that sees a lot of play in 2.0, because a lot of the ships that would default to push the limit in 1.0 to make them arc dodgy, outmaneuver is actually a really good option for those that are already arc dodging. Now you get a double bonus for arc dodging and flying well. So I think Soontir Fell without maneuver is going to be very, very good in 2.0.
Soontir Fell and Wedgehead Abatement.
Yes, and it's going to be scary. I think Fen Rao without maneuver is going to be very, very good in 2.0. So outmaneuver, you are going to see, especially with how the arcs and everything change, I think you will see that a lot. And I think it's always going to be, depending on points, I guess that's the thing, we don't know points, but in these threat cards for specific, you know, like what we're talking about here specifically, outmaneuver is in a lot of these ties, and I think that's going to be a pretty good buy. Like Aiden, without maneuver and a shield upgrade, it's 2 threat, so you can't bring Vader, that's the problem. But for 2 threat, that's a really good buy. For outmaneuver, shield upgrade, and Aiden's ability.
Though Aiden doesn't work on the tie advance anyway.
So there's been a little bit of a hullabaloo.
Oh, that's a good
about,
call.
But yeah, because we kind of mentioned Vader, and I want to get into supernatural reflexes.
Oh yeah,
Tyler, I know in our chats has been pretty adamant that that is an obnoxiously good card.
It is.
So just to kind of give everybody an idea what it does, before you activate, you can spend a force token. Or force, what is it, a force charge? I don't know what they're actually called.
Force charge, yeah.
Yeah,
force charge. To perform a barrel roll or boost action. Then if you performed actions that you don't have on your action bar, you suffer a damage. I don't quite understand that. Either way, it's effectively advanced, advanced sensors, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty freaking good on Darth Vader.
Yeah, because especially with Darth's ability with the Force, you can spend more Force charges to perform another action. So if he's using supernatural reflexes to barrel roll, he can then spend another charge to focus or target lock or, you know, whatever else he wants to do. You know, I can't remember what else is on his action
bar
in 2.0.
Not evade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, not evade. So
three
yeah.
options that you have are... barrel into a red focus or target lock.
Okay. And so did I hear that right, Ricky? I haven't looked supernatural reflexes very closely, but did you say you could do any action that's not even on your action bar?
If you performed actions you did not have on your action bar, you suffer a damage.
Yes. So basically
with
Darth Vader, you've got 2 choices. You could barrel roll or you can boost and take a damage.
That's what I was getting at. So you could theoretically, you know, advanced sensors boost using this, take 1 damage to get yourself, you know, completely out of dodge kind of thing. So that's a really good combo in 2.0. I think that's...
With Darth Vader in this particular setup, he has afterburners, so you might not need to.
Yeah. So that's another... Basically, Vader is 4 threat. For a reason with this build. He's got supernatural reflexes, fire control, which is different in 2.0. So it doesn't allow you to reacquire your lock for shooting at, you know, a target. It allows you to, if you don't spend the lock, you can reroll a die.
So it's linked battery.
Yes, in a way, yes. Or 1.0 predator kind of thing. So he's got fire control, supernatural reflexes. He's got a cluster missile, which is also interesting. And then he's got afterburners and a shield upgrade. So
hopping off a ledge off of natural reflexes. Everyone says it's way too good, way too good, way too good. Counterpoint.
I am not too scared about it because it makes you spend your force to do it. And let's be real. If you look at the action bars, you're only going to be able to use it on Force users, right? So Vader is probably the most obnoxious way to abuse it, at least from what we've seen so far. And I guess I'm still looking at that action bar like he'll take a damage if he boosts. He can barrel roll, but the barrel roll is a little bit more limiting in 2.0. I'm not really that scared about it, yes, but maybe that's also because I've seen 1.0 Kylo, and I kind of know what's coming, and I've seen other advanced sensor shenanigans with Nim, and, you know, with only having barrel roll, it's not that bad, you know.
It's good, but it's not... This isn't going to be something that breaks the game between two good players. Often, this is actually a... this is going to be a salve for players that aren't quite as good. Oh no, he figured out what I'm going to do. I'm going to be blocked. Let me try to...
Yeah, just like advanced sensors was back in the day. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
So,
so
this is going to be a card that has more utility lower on the skill skill range than on the higher end.
And I think there is still the concern that in 2.0, especially when you have now... All the ships have the arcs if they're bow ties or standard arcs. Now you're giving a ship like Vader the ability to essentially have advanced sensors Kylo with push the limit. He takes the damage for doing it, but he can takes two boost. Force charges and he can get wherever.
He does not have boost natively, though he does, in this case, have afterburners, which will allow him to... But he'll still take the damage if he does it through supernatural reflexes.
Yeah. Well, I guess what the point I was trying to make is, if you let that Vader get to endgame and you've only got one or two ships left, yes, you've lost. But that's not any different than what we've had with Soontir in 1.0 or anything like that. So the idea that I look at this, and maybe this is just knowing how this works, is... If I see that Vader on the board, I am not ignoring it. I'm trying to do what I can to corral it and get it off the board and eliminate it or force it to do things it's not trying to do. I'm not just going to give it my flank, So.
I also kind of want to point out that the reason people are in such a tizzy over Vader is, particularly in this event, you have 5 threat. And limited options. So, as you said, if you only have one ship left, Vader's going to be obnoxious. Well, you're only having two.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You may as well take the best ship and then something else.
Right. So in this exact situation, he's going to be strong, but in a normal game of 8 threat...
This specific event, yes, everyone will be taking Vader because they'll be able to make the best out of this threat build. And it's not the wrong choice. It is very much the correct choice. I know that a lot of people are actually saying Vader and screw my Academy pilot. I'm just taking Vader. And that's not wrong either. Because I don't think,
game theory is because the Academy pilot gives your opponent points. Whereas Vader, every ship gives half points. So I guess you can still give up 2 threat if you get Vader to half. I guess there is that.
Well, I guess the event really doesn't... I mean, points really aren't mattering. It's just 3 rounds for fun. The way I look at it, if I see that, I'm going to be taking both ships that I've got, and I'm going to be trying to corral Vader, do what I can, and then whatever, if he slips out, okay, I'll chase for the rest of the round and move on to the next game.
This is also a fun sideshow event. I mean, let's be honest here. If you go 0-3, oh no.
I mean, in general, I mean, you got to kind of pay attention to it for other game systems.
He is really, really good.
He's worth 4 threat.
So, yes, I would agree. Have you seen anything in the Rebel side that stands out to you, and why is it Horton Saul?
So, funny you should mention, Luke.
Yeah, I was just going to say the one ship on the Rebel side is Luke for Luke sure is, that jumps out.
Luke is the one that they say, because the three things I've heard are absolutely broken in two, right? And you guys can't see me, but I made the biggest air quotes you'd ever seen in your life.
Unbroken.
is Luke, Luke Gunner, and... supernatural reflexes on Vader. So let's talk about Luke, the X-Wing, and, you know, everyone says, look, I mean, you're never going to kill him. Why is that wrong or right?
It actually might not be right in this particular tournament.
Okay.
What Luke does is every time that he becomes a defender, gain a force charge. And a force charge can be used to change one eye to either a hit or an evade.
Okay.
I want to say he tops out at 2 force charges.
Yes. Yeah, he does.
So the idea here is that if I shoot at him with an entire tie swarm, he'll have the same 1.0 Luke effect of being able to change one eye to an evade every attack.
It's potentially
except if he doesn't need to, he gets to keep the force charge.
Or if he rolls 2 eyeballs and he has the 2 force,
he can spend both.
So you know what he does on offense? He just walks up and takes a target lock, because I've got soft mods on attack and I got mods on defense anyway. So he's actually very strong all around. I have done the numbers on him. And I mean, naked, he's probably not worth 3 threat, but they throw some other stuff on him.
The upgrades, he's worth 3 threat.
With the proton torpedoes themselves in this type of event, that's going to be really solid.
So now what I mentioned earlier is that he might not be super strong in this event, is that this event is specifically designed in such a way to minimize his ability, because he's only ever going to be attacked twice in a round. Now that's good, but it's not, you know, tie swarm good. He's going to be decent, no matter how you slice it, but he's not going to be, because he's initiative 5 and not 6, there's a chance that Vader can dance around him.
So let's talk about the best pilot in the galaxy, Horton Song.
Jack Porkins? Sure. Jack Porkins is...
See? So Ricky, like, this is where you should be sad, right? Because here's your chance to come do this event and put Horton Salm on the table and have fun, and you're not
you
doing
know,
it.
You know, there's a... So here's one thing I will tell you, is despite the fact that I'm probably going to be flying TIE Swarm early in 2.0, it's just... I've been prepping... Up until these X-Wings, I had been prepping flying TIE Swarms basically exclusively for months. But I'm gonna have a Horton Somlis, you best believe it.
So I just want to say that if you just drop the T, it becomes a Y swarm.
Oh boy! So is there any other X-Wings that sort of stand out Rebel lists that sort of stand out threat wise?
So I was joking about it, but Jack might not be a bad option, because he does have outmaneuver. He's got a bunch of upgrades. He's got hull upgrade. He's got afterburners. He'll be a lot more maneuverable than Luke will be. He'll be able to do things that Luke can't. And I think that's a very valuable option to consider.
Yeah, because he can turn himself into a defender kind of thing,
and,
you know.
And initiative 4 or 5 does not matter in this match if you're up against an Imperial.
Yeah, and the R5-D8 can kind of help you stay alive longer, get rid of some of that hull damage that you might take, that type
of
thing.
Exactly. At various intervals in the last 2-3 years, tried to, like, come up with a Jack Porkins list that I'm satisfied with, and it's never happened. So I'm crossing my fingers that it happens in 2.0.
You missed the 1.0 opportunity where Jack was literally broken, which was Infra Porkins for a very brief period of time. What's the upgrade where you can take a stress to get an extra attack die?
Opportunist, if the target has no tokens.
Before they ruled on it, you could actually do that more than once in a trigger.
Oh dear.
So you would just keep rolling Porkins's stress removal until you had one hull left,
and then dump
like 20 or 30 red dice on someone.
The god as he should be.
You could just nuke anything off the board.
All right. So, is there any other sort of threats that are like rebel things that we want to cover that we should be covering?
Well, I mean, other than Horton, I mean, so you have to bring Luke plus a Y-wing, right? So, I know, like, I'm playing rebels, so I went and looked at all the Y-wing, you know, 2-point threat cards because Luke's 3 threat. And I mean, I'm all on the Dutch Vandertrain for the event. So what I'm going to be doing, especially because I know I'm going to be seeing a bunch of Vader, is trying to maximize passing, you know, the alley-oop target lock to Luke and trying to pinch this big V and be like, hey, Vader, you're going to fly into proton torpedoes from two angles, right? So that's what I'm going to plan on doing. I think...
Is that
new? It does. So you
to addition
it is new.
After you perform
it is
the target
new.
Lock action,
yes, it is.
Choose one friendly ship at range 1-3. That ship may acquire a lock on the object you locked, ignoring range restrictions.
That wording has been tweaked. The effect.
Yep, and Dutch also works out to range 3 on a friendly 2 now. So
I want to also suggest another list, which is Jack and Dutch. Because they are both pilot skill 4. That allows you a lot more maneuverability. And because Jack is going to be focused on more maneuverability, Dutch can give him the target lock.
I'm sitting here staring at how I would build Horton, and none of these look good. That's making me sad.
you might have... some good luck with Red Squadron veteran.
Yeah, that's well. I mean, here's the thing: proton torpedoes are good. Yeah, so
yeah,
that's...
Proton torpedoes are good. So blue, I think you could make a reasonable argument for Horton, though honestly, Nora is your better choice.
Boo this
right?
man.
And the only reason that's true is once again what we're talking about with Luke. You're minimizing the number of ships on the board. So Horton's ability is...
It's just not... Yeah, yeah, it's not as good as Nord's for a 2v2.
If this were a 8-threat game, I think there's a strong argument about Horton. In a 2-ship game, Nora just has the edge.
Yeah, but the mustache powers you through, man.
Agreed.
wait, what's Biggs? Is Biggs a 2? No, Biggs is a 2. You could so do the mustache power team, man. You could do Biggs and Horton, man.
Though you don't.
That's your 5 threat.
You're only going to be rolling hits and evades that entire time.
Biggs is not an option in this tournament.
He's not in the core set?
No, he's in the expansion.
Oh, okay. Well, that's sad.
Your 4 options are Blue Squadron Escort, Red Squadron Veteran, Luke Skywalker, and Jack Porkins. Those are your 4.
Oh, I thought Biggs was another option. Okay, right, that's my bad.
Let's move on from the threat cards for just a quick second. Did you got something else that you wanted to jump into?
I was going to say one other Y-Wing pilot that I think is going to be seeing the table with Luke or Porkins is just the Gray Squadron Bomber. I mean, there you got an ion cannon, and you've got proton bombs. And the droid, I think, is recovering or repairing hull damage, so you've got a couple charges there to keep it alive a little bit longer. I think that'll be the other option. So you'll have that or Dutch. I think those are probably going to be your 2 Y-Wings that you'll be seeing on the table.
Gold Squadron Veteran has expert handling.
You
true.
Can't see me right now.
I mean,
so the barrel rolls white instead of red, you're saying?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you want to pass up Dutch's ability for.
That would be great if you had a turret to go with it.
Right?
Yeah, it would. Yeah. The expert handling, I was all on board with that until I saw it was proton torpedoes instead of the ion cannon. I was like, oh, well, if that's the ion cannon, yeah, maybe. But
not,
no. Yeah.
Not that I would have any way to know this, but I was super happy barrel rolling Y-Wings.
that'll be fun. I'm guaranteeing I'm going to do that with Dutch one time just because,
yeah,
I can.
Right?
just like, look at that. That Y-Wing just barrel. Sure, I have the stress.
Guys, yeah. He can clear stress with a bank now, too, which is amazing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yep. That's been needed for a long time.
All
right.
That's what I hear, at least.
So let's go into the kits real quick. We've had announced the wave kits that we heard about earlier, that we're gonna have prizes for. You know, what those are basically, like, you know, the old season kits, right? Bob, I mean, you were the one looking at that, so.
Oh, the things that were the special wave events, you mean?
Yeah, those are just kind of like old season, like, kits, except better.
Yeah, I mean, they're intended for that particular wave, so I don't know if it's like an Imdar Alpha style thing, if they're going to have any particular rules on file matches or anything, but yeah. It's
the other kits that were announced, though, were the Hyperspace Tournament kits, and those are pretty darn interesting in that, like, these are effectively new regionals, right? Am I reading this right? Basically, you have a store has a choice of the kit one or kit two, and you can order them. It's for approximately, what is it, somewhere between 32 and 60 players. I don't actually know if I'm reading this right, but these are the Hyperspace Trials are new regionals. Is that right? Anybody?
Ooh. Yeah, they might have made an announcement about changing
they might.
The format. Are they doing away with regionals and now they're doing hyperspace qualifiers? Yeah, am I misremembering that?
They were changing the terminology, and I don't remember where they changed it to. Basically, they were moving away from saying something was a store championship or regional or nationals, and they were giving their own little
spin
monitors.
On it, yeah. So
I don't remember what those were.
So
called,
the price points were spoiled on this, and here's the thing: I don't know anything behind the curtain, but the price on these things is $450. That seems expensive, right? Am I like again? I don't know behind the curtain, but that seems high.
Yeah, that is definitely higher than it was, but I don't know what the old prices were.
Yeah, I don't have first-hand knowledge of what the old prices were either. I do know that it is higher. I just don't know by how much. But from what I have heard is that the prize support, it should be significantly better as well compared to the 1.0 years. So maybe it works itself out that way in prize support, but we'll just have to wait and see, I think.
All right, well, I think that's just about everything because we are at the hour and a half mark, more or less. I do want to say that we still do have our contest for painted ships. I haven't picked a winner yet. I want to see a couple more people submitting some nice painted ships in. Feel free to send that in, and we'll pick a winner next time. And that's about it. Does anybody have any shout-outs they want to give before we tie a bow on this thing?
Not specifically. I guess shout out to everybody that I'll be seeing at the 2.0 event at Gen Con and playing in the final 1.0 finale.
I would like to give a shout out to the organizers of Gen Con. As someone who runs a much smaller event, that has got to be an absolute nightmare. And the fact that they pull it off every year with, you know, 60 plus thousand people is incredible. A friend of mine, an X-Wing player, lives in Bozeman, Montana, and was commenting that the city of Gen Con is larger than the city he lives in.
The only shout-out I have is, if you are going to Gen Con, wash your hands, drink lots of water, and try and avoid con crud. But you're probably going to get it anyway. So
yeah, I actually spoke a couple years ago about how to... to go to an event like that.
So. Mark, actually, we've had you do that, I believe, at least two times.
Sure.
And the drink water, wash your hands, eat a lot.
6-2-1 Yeah. So if you want that advice, just go back through all of the episodes of Scum and Villainy.
Yes, listen to every single. Yeah, listen to every single episode, and you'll find it. Anyways,
it's in there.
Bob, you got anything before we wrap a bow on this thing?
Not in particular.
All right. Well, Bob loves all of you. 10001. That's just the code for all droids to attack. All right. So for Bob Randall, and Will Barnacle and Mark Fletcher, my name is Richard White. Thanks for listening to the Scum and Villainy podcast, and good hunting.